Okay, a much anticipated New Zealand screen history segment now. It used to apparently beat Oprah and Mr. Bean in the ratings. It was on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. after the news, and it was on for more than a decade. And kids would stay up and watch it if their parents let them. And this was the theme song. Yes, Tuck's Wonder Dogs, created by TV Power Couple, presenter Mark Leishman and producer Joe Raymond, who both join me now. Kia ora koura. Hi, guys.
Hi, GC.
Thanks for being on the show. And I want to get into the history of Tuck's Wonder Dogs, but I just wonder if you could each give our audience an impression of how big the show remains in the hearts of New Zealanders. Do people bring it up often to you, Mark?
Very, very frequently, actually, Jesse. And it's a certain age group. I think you're probably a wee bit old. Sorry to say this, and you're what, probably mid-40s. But we're generally, I get a lot of reaction from sort of 25-year-olds because it hasn't been on air for 15 years now. And so that age group, you know, the 25 to sort of mid-30s. Oh, you're the dog man, you know. So I get that still pretty frequently, which is quite
that is
charming. I love it.
Funny, isn't it? Yeah, I thought you were going to say I was a bit young for it. That it would, you know, that you would be talking about the parents, but you're actually talking about the kids who used to stay up and watch it and have fond memories of Saturday night, maybe pushing the bedtime out a little.
Well, that's right. I think, you know, the parents now, the old ones are probably, they're at the other end of the scale or well above your age group. But I think because it had that appeal, it was, you know, it appealed to kids and to adults for different reasons, a lot to do with Jim Moore's commentary, which was very clever, and the adults really got the in-jokes and loved that. And I think just about everybody, even to this day on the news, you get the end of the program on a Sunday night, you get a dog story or something. Well, people just seem to love watching dogs.
Joe, there's not much on TV for adults and their children, eh?
No. And I think probably Mark's right. That was the appeal back in the day because kids used to watch it, and I think for different reasons. They'd watch it because they thought the dogs were magic and they could tell the difference between certain things that they had to retrieve, and it was all about scent and smell and things. But children just loved the dogs. And I think, yeah, as Mark said, I think adults and parents really enjoyed the humour. And it was a combination of both, I think.
Where did the concept come from, Joe?
Well, it was back in the day when Maureen Sinton, who was the program director at TV1 at the time, she was looking after Saturday nights on TV1. And it was actually when the dog show finished, the sheepdog show, that finished. And she was looking for a new program. And we just put the idea forward. She'd talked about a similar thing in England and at the time, and along with a number of other production companies, we just put the idea forward and got over the line. It was fantastic. It was really fun.
They decided that rural dogs had 14 years, I think. It was an extraordinary run for John Gordon and his dog show with that great theme as well, and decided it was time for the townie dogs to have a go. And this agility, of course, all the dogs, we're all members of clubs, agility clubs around New Zealand and obedience clubs. And so they had to be of a certain standard, but Joe can explain the intricacies of actually choosing the dogs. We could have had a show full of like border collies or kelpies because they were so smart, but that would have been, you know, a bit samey. So we had to really spread the types of dogs, the breeds, etc.
And we didn't always choose the best dogs either. We designed it so there were good dogs and not so good dogs, so that we kept the humour up and it was funny and fun. And as Mark said, we've got way too many people and dogs, you know, applying, and it was really hard to choose. But it was all quite carefully designed, and you know, we took it all very seriously, so that the balance was right through the whole series. And it was good fun. We laid it all out. It was pre-internet right at the start, and the production manager, Pip Richards, and I, she was a good friend. We worked from home, and And we used to lay all the applications out on the ground, out on the kitchen floor, and literally design the program on the kitchen floor, kitchen table, and decide who would be in it and who wouldn't. It was good fun. It was really good.
And well, then Joe,
did you take advantage of any? Sorry, Mark. Did you take advantage of any sort of existing dog shows, like non-televised dog shows, to find some good stars?
Well, we did through, as Mark said, through the agility clubs and the obedience clubs. And then we added the water retrieve in it as well. So there were three parts to it. There was the agility, where the dogs jumped over things. And then there was the obedience, where they retrieved things and then they swam. And we used to ask these people. They were a great group of competitors and great sort of family of dog people around New Zealand that were really behind us. And they really, really loved it. And they were easy to deal with and very cooperative and would put themselves into teams. And then we would sort of assess and make sure, as I say, that they weren't all just good dogs and excellent. And then they put themselves into teams and applied, and it was just to take it from there.
They were the easiest people to work with. They didn't care about having to stay in flash hotels. They were happy. They wanted to stay near their dogs, so they'd be in their camper vans or in their tents, and the dogs would be there with them. And the dogs themselves, in terms of their abilities, there are levels. You get a senior dog and a junior dog and one that's learning and a starter. And so it was all spread through. So it worked quite well.
And we took their advice. The dog people knew what they were doing. Mark and I didn't really know what we were doing. We used to take advice from them about games and what would work and what wouldn't work. And, you know, and they were our judges. And, you know, so they knew what they were talking about.
A classic one was chocolate. At the time, didn't realise in the mid-90s that a lot of dogs are actually allergic to chocolate, and it can be quite serious. And right. One of our obedience exercises was they had to retrieve a block of Cadbury's chocolate. and, of course, as soon as we set that up, the people said, no, you can't do that. We had them with baguettes, French baguettes. We had them with sausages. Yeah. They did that all right. Most of them ate them.
That always provided the humour. It was good fun,
If you're listening and this is bringing back some memories, you can text me on 2101. We're talking about Tuck's Wonder Dogs. And Anne in Christchurch, Mark, says that her border collie, Mac, would recognise the theme tune and race to sit in front of the TV screen. Did you hear that from other people?
We did.
Yes, we did get that.
And Dexter used to do that too. Honestly, there were lots of dogs around at the time that we used to hear stories like that.
And it was quite. The theme was based on Batman. It was basically a lot of barking involved, so you could understand why dogs would get a bit confused and probably go behind the screen to see where the dog was.
You mentioned Dexter. Can you fill people in who didn't watch the show?
Oh, well, I used to always promote Dexter as the star of the show and Mark as the co-host.
Yeah,
because he had a huge following. And he really didn't do anything. He just used to stand there with Mark looking handsome.
He couldn't have done any of the exercises, none at all, but he was so handsome. And he stood beside me and we went through the years together. He was a big golden Labrador, yellow Labrador. He was a huge guy. He was about 47 kg, which is quite big for a lab. And he just had a bit of a presence. And towards the end, when he got quite old, we actually bought him a Lazy Boy chair. And in the latter episodes, he would actually sit like king on the throne of his Lazy Boy. And kids would surround him. It was very endearing. And he couldn't hardly move at this stage, dear old thing. But he was a classic lab. He was a great, great old mate.
Yeah, and somebody on text says, sorry, Joe, someone on text says that they reckon the nation felt your loss when you lost Dexter.
Yeah.
Was that quite public when that happened?
That is true. Yeah, Dexter had a fan club. And because Mark had made some documentaries about guide dogs leading up to that, and we had a big association with the New Zealand guide dogs, and they were real fans of Dexter's as well. And when he died, Angela Dordney, it was the second story on the news when he died, and I remember that. And then the guide dog organisation organised a huge sort of funeral and family fun day, and all these. Loads and loads, hundreds of people came.
Wow. And there were speeches and the police dogs did a display and the search and rescue dogs were there and the guide dogs. It was very special. Hundreds, thousands of people came along. And it was all for old Dexter. Yeah, we made, I think, the second item on the TV One News, and I think we even made about the fourth item on TV Three News. That was quite good.
And he used to wear the red scarf. All the other dogs wore blue scarves and Dexter was the only one that wore the red scarf. And he always stood out. He was good fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've had two Labradors since then waiting for a chance to be the next Dexter.
13 years they've been waiting.
Mickey and Buddy are waiting, and they're now 13 years old, so I think they might have missed their chance.
Joe, do I get the sense that you pitched the show and they accepted it, and then at some point you perhaps wondered if you'd bitten off more than you could chew?
Yes, I suppose at the beginning, in the very early days, absolutely on the first day, absolutely. And the first, it was at Western Springs, it was pouring with rain, and I was pregnant with my son, who's now 28 years old. And I remember we were driving towards Western Springs, and I remember Mark and I thinking, no, should we just keep driving? I don't want to do this. This is too scary. And because at that point, the dog people didn't really know us, the agility and obedience people. And so we really did have to gain their trust in that first series. And so it was a bit nerve-wracking. It was
really hard because we had never, I mean, we'd seen dogs jumping over things and done all that. We'd done that research. But no one knew if the idea would actually work. And so it was a leap of faith. So we had about 100 crew there, the sets all built, everyone ready to go, then 70-odd dogs and their handlers, and at Western Springs Park in the pouring rain, mid-July, and we're driving on the Northwestern and think, God, I think I might just go to Murawai. I just keep going.
Andrew Shaw, the infamous Andrew Shaw, was the first director at that time. And again, we thought it was like going to be an entertainment sort of directing job, but in actual fact, I think Mark realised soon after that it was really, it really required somebody that knew about sport because it moved so quickly. So the directors were vitally important to this. They really were, and how successful it was. And we had Andrew Shaw, and then we had Jilly Tyler and Francis, and then Wayne Leonard, who's since then done, America's Cup. So you have to have the right directors because they have to be able to follow the dogs really quickly. So.
Yeah, because a dog will do a course in about, between, 20 to 40 seconds. And so, and they're running through tunnels and through slaloms and jumping over ramps and all that stuff. And you've got to keep up. Yeah, and the first few, I think Andrew was just about pulling his hair out, thinking, my God, how are we going to cope with this? But it all settled down, we got used to it.
We've got a clip here. This is Demi the dog attempting the water retrieve.
Well, perhaps this time Demi should do it. She's a lab with Lexina wired for the retriever's return.
Come on, guys, show us how it's done. Oh, yes. Demi, named after Demi Moore. Lexina says she's a first-class gun dog, apparently.
Fetch it, Dem. Good girl. Good girl.
Thank goodness. Don't think we've ever seen three dogs fail on the water consecutively before. I think we can probably blame the government for that. Everybody else does. Not quite finished. Up to the top they go. Back to the start, and this is very nice at last. Maximum points for the retrievers.
Well, Demi restores my faith that dogs do fetch with that fine effort, and deserving the 10 points, Little Fox won the dawdle for second. The scoreboard shows that after a slow start, the retrievers are making a charge on the leaderboard with the Bay Boys still in front.
Love it. And, of course, you are beloved as the host, Mark, but I should mention Jim Mora, who now does Sunday morning here at RNZ, and a lot of people texting to say that he was a key part. His humour was a key part of it. John says he remembers that Jim used to sort of get inside the dogs' heads and say out loud what he thought the dogs were thinking and feeling. What do you remember?
Well, what we used to do, we used to edit the program together, and then I would give Jim a VHS tape of it, and he would take that home and put it in his machine and sit there, and he had all the information that he'd gathered about each individual dog, and then he'd watch it, and then he'd create those images and get inside the dog's mind, and he was absolutely brilliant, honestly. He would write in the longhand, distinctly remember, I wish I could get some examples, but he would write in longhand. He would even put pauses in, even little coughs and things, because the aim was to make it sound like it was live, that it was coming to you directly as you're seeing it. But of course, it was somewhat manufactured, but he was absolutely brilliant. And I mentioned before, and Joe's mentioned, that he just about was able to give the adults something to listen out for, as well as the kids who would be entertained by the dogs themselves. Now, he was absolutely more than a pivotal part of it.
Yeah, he was integral to the success. He really was.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was just going to say, a few weeks ago, you had you were talking about Top Town on the segment, Jesse, a few weeks ago. The same Yeah, Ross McKenzie, the same guy that designed all the Top Town games, designed our Wonder Dogs games. And he was really, he again was a very important part of the team. Yeah, he's really clever behind the scenes people. Yeah.
Who knew what they were doing. Yeah. It was fantastic. It was good fun.
And for Stead as well.
Yeah. It was like, again,
This will sound like a bit of a cliche, but it really seems like it was more than just a TV show. I'm going to share this text that's just come through from the Mitchell family. They say Tuck's Wonder Dogs was our family's favourite program. When our elderly black lab passed away and we were all filled with grief, Joe and Mark loaned us Dexter for an afternoon and we took him up to Mount Eden Normal School to help with our pain. And they also gave us a signed copy of the Dexter book and we will never forget their kindness.
That's very special.
Isn't that special? I'm getting emotional now, Jess.
How about this one from Claudia? I was on Tuck's Wonder Dogs with my golden retriever, who swam every day, but on national television he acted as if he'd never seen water before and refused to get into the pool. She says he was gorgeous, and the crowd loved it with Jim Moore's witty commentary as well. I guess there was a bit of that stage fright. Even dogs suffer from it.
Well, they absolutely do, and it's because they're surrounded by all the paraphernalia, the cameras. We didn't actually necessarily have audiences there, but all the competitors were there, the crew were there, so there's probably 150 people there, and suddenly a dog's in the spotlight and everyone's attention's on it, and it thinks, what the hell do I do, you know? And yes, a lot of them lost it. In fact, there's a classic clip that I love. One of my favourite ones was a guy called Jim who worked at Cadbury's and Dunedin, and he had a dog called Stan, a little Spaniel.
Can I jump in here, Mark? Because we've actually got this clip. So do you want to set it up or do you want to talk about it after we've heard the clip?
Well, I'll set it up in the fact that Jim had Stan. Stan had to retrieve a cuddly toy with a pink ribbon, and it had Stan's scent, Jim's scent on it, so he knew which one to collect. But, of course, he'd had his eye on the ducks that were in the water right next door to where this was all taking place. So I'll let you go with it now.
Okay.
So we saw Jim in the sprints. Now he's back in obedience with the Otago Highlanders. Oh, no.
Yeah, Jim, hey!
Oh.
Jim!
Oh, this looks way touch back. And go.
Here, Jim, here! Jim, come here! Come here!
Stan working hard. We'll leave the commentary for Stan, I think.
No! Come here! Stay! Stay! Go back over. Go back!
No, wrong bear.
No! No! Go back!
That's not Jim. The one with Stan sent on.
Hey! Get out of here! Jim!
This is really entertaining. I wonder what's going to happen now.
Here, Jim, here! Come here! Come here! Here, Jim! Get away back! Get
away! Oh, no. Not that.
Get here! Come here! Jim!
Oh, those ducks.
Jim.
Those ducks are tempting.
Get away back!
Is he going to do it or not?
Lay back! Lay back!
Oh, he's looking... Yes, he's looking good this time.
He has
done it.
That's it!
Didn't think he'd ever get it. Oh, Jim's off. I've done it, says Jim. Now it's my turn.
Come here, Jim! Come here, Jim!
A frustrated... English hunting spaniel. His parents came out from England. All that blood coursing through his veins. Oh, he spooked one duck. Stan, well known at Cadbury's in Dunedin, used to cook their biscuits for 15 years.
Come here, Jim!
Sure, he'd be quite happy to roast a duck, but that's not likely.
Come on! Come here, Jim!
Oh, look at him go right across the lake.
That's great.
You've got to see that. I think it's up on your website. That one, they'll be up on your website. It's really worth watching. It's really good fun.
There's another nice story, along with lots of photos that Joe has supplied,
and a lot of the dogs. Some beautiful portraits of the dogs. Actually, if you had a look, you might see one that you recognise, Joe. Mm.
There's loads of them. There are loads and loads of lovely Wonder Dogs photos, and we're thrilled that you guys are so interested in it. There is another story, just quickly, Jesse, about a very famous now dog trainer from Rotorua called Chelsea Mariner, and she used to watch the program. Her mother told us that she used to watch the program as a three-year-old and set up an agility course in the kitchen and set her dogs around it. And then 10 years on, she entered the program, and we thought, oh man, we're going to put her in it. She's definitely going to go in it. She went in as a 13-year-old and won the very last series of Wonder Dogs that we made. So that was quite cool. And she's made a career of it now, hasn't she?
Yeah, she's a real star. Yeah, she knows her dogs, I tell you. It was a great story.
I imagine it was useful in terms of sort of network politics that you had a sponsor too. You would have been bringing a bit of money with the show.
Yeah.
Well, the sponsors actually, I think, were there from the beginning because of the sheepdogs. So we thank John Gordon for that as well, because, of course, Tuck's famous sheepdog brand, and they were trying, I think, to spread the message and get more townie dogs to eat their products. And so hence we came along, and it's a really successful. Tuck's is a bit like that, you know. So the show is more often called Tuck's Wonder Dogs than Wonder Dogs itself. So as a commercial exercise, as a branding exercise, it was probably one of the best, quite frankly.
Did you travel around? You mentioned Western Springs. Did you travel around much?
We did. We tried to sort of alternate between the North Island and the South. We had, and obviously we used to film it all on, you know, over a 3 or 4 day period. And so if it rained, it used to rain for 10 weeks on television every time Wonder Dogs was on. But we did used to go around the country and to some great spots, you know, Mount Hutt and Hawke's Bay. And
It was the case of, rather than bring all the dogs into, say, Auckland, it was a case of us going to them. So we'd have South Island dogs 1 year, North Island dogs the next. And it was places like, you know, Mount Hutt we did it, well, not up the hill, but in Methven area, Hawke's Bay, Martinborough, in the centre of town in Martinborough. We did the capital, did Christchurch, and, of course, Auckland out at Murawai. So, it was fun. It was great to, as I said, to tour around with it, really, wasn't it? It was fun each year.
And you talked about, we heard there in that clip, actually, that the competitors took it pretty seriously. I guess, Joe, you had to make a choice as to how you were going to portray them on TV, right?
Yes.
And it sounds like you made a conscious decision not to sort of make fun of them.
No, not absolutely. That was very much the key. You know, I made that key decision right at the start, and I always listened to them. I really tried to listen to their feedback. But they're the type of people that were always about promoting their dogs rather than themselves. So the dogs were the stars, not the people. And no matter how, you know, where we would set them up, what game we would ask them to do, what I'd make them, you know, suggest that they do, they were always went along with it. They'd get into the T-shirts, they'd wear the things, they'd dress up. And they were really good sports. And I think after a few years, they, you know, were confident that we weren't laughing at them, that we were celebrating their dog. And I think that we hopefully gained their trust quite early on. And I think possibly that's why it was so successful amongst the agility and obedience clubs, and they were so keen to be involved.
Particularly midway into the latter part of the series, because it was 10 years it was on, it became a bit of a badge of honour. You know, to get on the program was something kind of special. You know, and that you only had your own little 15 minutes of fame.
The
or whatever.
The worst part was ringing people and telling them that they hadn't got in. That was really awful. We'd had four times too many, and I would ring everybody and say, you know, who didn't make it, and apologised for not getting into it, and felt sorry for them. It was probably a bit naive, but anyway, I felt sorry for them.
I was Mr. Nice. I wasn't able to make those calls. I was the one who probably would get the one to say, you've made it in, and Joe had to do the hard yards and tell all those poor people. And, of course, you tend to take it personally. What's wrong with my dog? And then a lot of it was to do with the fact, well, your dog is a border collie, and we've got 1,500 of those already. And it was just sort of, you know, in a sense, the luck of the draw. But
it was all about how the episode would look with small dogs, big dogs, good dogs. Yeah, we tried to. So it was all, there was a lot of other reasons why they didn't get in or not. But, it was good fun.
I have a nice surprise for the two of you. One of the things people most often bring up is the Tuck's Wonder Dogs theme, and we decided to commission a friend of the show, Paul Cathrow from the band Heart the Unclear. We decided to challenge him and see if he could have his own go at producing the Tuck's Wonder Dogs theme. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
And so he's a really well-known New Zealand musician. Yeah. He's got a great band, totally. And he's in lockdown, and he was like, I'm up for it. So would you like to hear it?
I would. That's fantastic.
I love that. Can I just say before you start, though, Steve Robinson was the guy who came up with the theme. I presume he's still on Waiheke Island. He was a great musician, is a great musician, has been around for years. So I'll just give him a little credit too, because he came up with it, and it's been such a wonderful theme. So I can't wait to hear
his view. Well, to me, someone who doesn't know music, it sounded quite straightforward. And when I sent it to Paul Cathrow, he was like, actually, that bass part is pretty tricky. So that's obviously a credit to the original composer. Go, Steve. Okay, enjoy. Here it comes.
Wonder.
Good Paul evening Cathro. And welcome to the show. I'm Mark Leishman and this is my dog, Dexter. Thanks for joining us. Oh, I went back into memory mode.
Oh, that was very good. Thank you for that. That was very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Good yeah, Paul. I'll well do the big ending. Thanks, Paul. Guys, I have to ask, why did it end?
Well, I suppose at the time, 10 years is quite a long time. I mean, it's a good run. We made 105 episodes, and in television land, you can't really complain about that. It was a good run, and we were always, you know, we used to, you know, have to put the case every year and get it back on and talk to the programmers and so forth. But I think it ran its course. I mean, it was hard when it ended, and it was a very short, sharp,
brutal
meeting when they sort of stood against the desk and said, oh, you know what, I think we've had enough of the dogs.
We had a ballroom dancing show with Jim Moore as well called Battle of the Ballroom, and we had Wonder Dogs. We went into this meeting and we lost both of them.
In 10 minutes.
Our whole career gone, just like that. Fortunately, there's always radio, Jesse. There's always radio. That's a good thing.
and it's quite hard to watch the old episodes too, I understand. Just wrapping up now.
Yes, they're not easy to get come by. In fact, we still get people requesting. I was in the show in 1997. Have you got it? We have got them all here.
And, in the garage. You know, they're in the garage.
Perhaps the internet one day they'll start appearing.
Yeah. We've tried quite hard to get it back. You know, we've tried over the years to really, suggest it again. And, you know 3 years ago. Yeah. They turned me down 3 weeks ago.
I'm going to jump in here, Joe, because we've got the pips coming up. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time today and for this great show, Mark Leishman and Joe Raymond.